County Board of Supervisors meeting will now come to order, and may we all stand and pledge allegiance to the flag. And please remain standing as the invocation will be given by Pastor Dave Kerr of Trinity United Presbyterian Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for the privilege of letting me pray with you and for you this morning. And it's a great privilege because usually Dick is sitting listening to me, and today I get to sit and listen to him. Let's
Everyone
pray.
Everyone has their day.
Let's pray. Lord and God, we recognize on a day like this that we need you. We recognize that you are sovereign Lord. We thank you for this wonderful privilege of being able to come before you to seek your wisdom and guidance as the Board of Supervisors direct this wonderful county. And God, we pause just to say there is great need in our county, and we would seek your wisdom and guidance. Thank you for the leadership you've imparted these supervisors, those in the cities of this great county, the people that are being served and the needs that are being met. And all that's done this morning, Lord, would you guide our hearts and our attention to your throne of grace? For we pray this to that throne of grace. Amen.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring, and to those who are present this morning and those who are watching online or on TV. I'd like to begin by thanking each of our county employees and our department heads for the great work that is being done every day in serving the people of our community. Without your passion and commitment, we could not do the things we do in meeting the needs of the public. Today, I am pleased to say the state of the county is strong and growing stronger every day. We are in the sixth year of financial recovery from the Great Recession, and since the bottom of that time, we have regrown our reserves, significantly paying down debt, found ways to improve the efficiency of county operation, and launched a major community initiative to improve quality of life over the next 10 years. Our organization is leaner, better, and continues to prepare for the eventual downturn that will come. We are working harder than ever to serve our community and make the future better for the residents of our county. While we still have major challenges that face our community, we are pleased at our direction and have great hope for our future. Our Board of Supervisors' priorities continue to direct our journey as we focus on safety, health, our local economy, partnership, agriculture, infrastructure, and the efficient delivery of public service. In 2014, we began a three-year plan to build back critical public safety service through millions of dollars in investment. Our goal is to add back 75 positions by 2017-18. We have also forged new relationships with the court system to improve efficiency in getting the backlog of cases to be completed trial. Also this year, we saw a major step taken, and the police officer's standard training regular basic course was reactivated at the Raymond Simon Criminal Justice Training Center. The county continues to operate a robust outpatient health clinic system, serving thousands of underserved patients in our community. Our mental health system is seeing success in avoiding hospitalization through outpatient treatment whenever possible. Our psychopathical, pardon me, health facilities is proving low-cost alternates to out-of-the-county treatment. Our Department of Children's Support Service continues to deliver outstanding performances and has turned in a statewide leader for cost efficiency operations. The return on investment for child support is now at $3.49 for every dollar spent on the program. This is an amazing number. And we are grateful to the staff of that department for their outstanding work. We thank you. A focal point of the Board of Supervisors is a strong local economy. We continue to work with the community service districts to assist with water and infrastructure improvements in places like the Airport District, Park Lawn, Rose Landing, and Empire. Our agricultural heritage is a part of our foundation, and we should continue to protect it. Stanislaus County has been the leader in the state in addressing water challenges that face our state. In 2015, we launched our temporary water assistance program and installed 46 tanks for families to get quick access to water after their wells had gone dry. The project is working as 6 tanks have already been removed after new wells were drilled. And the county set up a financial loan program in the summer of 2014 to prove financial assistance to repair domestic water wells for those citizens living in the unincorporated area of Stanislaus County. This program works to assist those who have no other option when it comes to paying for well repairs. Today, loans have been approved to fund wells for 6 households of senior citizens. Although the utilization of this program has tapered off over the last few months, the Board of Supervisors has continued to support the program by allocating an additional $200,000 to it in September of 2015. There is currently $300,000 remaining that can be loaned to those in need, and I encourage anyone interested to review the program details on our website. I have long said that government is not the answer to everyone's problems. It is finding the right partnership opportunity where the community and government can come together. The past year, we launched a major initiative called the Focus on Prevention, where the county is helping to facilitate a long-term solution to major community issues. The community has widely embraced this effort, and the Stewardship Council has taken the leading role in driving this forward. Our focus on the homeless issue has gained traction countywide, and while it is a highly complex issue, we are hoping it is a springboard to tackle other issues impacting our residents. Our county mentor program continues to impact the lives of young people in our community with more than 25,000 hours of volunteerism. This is since its inception. The program is recognized nationally for its impact, and we thank everyone who is involved in reaching out to our youth of our community. I'd like to also recognize another program that has been a long-standing partnership with Stanislaus County. The Latino Emergency Council was formed as a partnership with the county, El Casilio, and the Hispanic Leadership Council to ensure effective communication with the Latin community during emergency situations. Since its founding, the organization has reached nonprofit status, has expanded its mission into the community emergency preparedness, education, and outreach, and is celebrating a milestone. Happy 10th anniversary. Job well done. After congratulating, I skipped the page. Our strong agricultural economy and our heritage are a vital part of the community. We've already spoken of our focus on water and our efforts to protect this resource. But we also do much more. The past year, our agricultural commissioner has had to deal with some significant issues, such as avian influenza and a new invasive species in our area. We are continuing to strengthen the infrastructure of the county and have begun to reinvest in county parks through restoring staff, making facility improvements, and completion of a market plan will bring increased awareness of county parks and increased revenue. We increased our police active league service for juvenile crime prevention in Keys, Grayson, and we partner with Orville Wright School and Head Start program for services at Oregon Park. We also implemented a 3-year plan to restore code enforcement service to provide a 7-day-a-week prevention in the community to improve graffiti abatement. We negotiated through a significant change in solid waste area, but as a result, we were able to secure a 10-year service agreement with all cities' jurisdictions. Keeping the cities together was challenging, as interest of the cities can vary widely. But in the end, being together, making us stronger, more cost-effective, provide greater value to the community. The Board of Supervisors has had a passion for the efficient delivery of public service. Our belief is taxpayer dollars belong to taxpayers, and we are accountable for investing these funds to the best possible way with the best possible impact. That is why I stand before you today and tell you our financial condition is strong. Our general fund financial reserves are at $114 million. Our debt is extremely low, with a debt-to-equity ratio of 4.85 compared to the surrounding county average of 33.3%. Our authorized county positions are still at 9.8% below our high at the beginning of the Great Recession, reflecting our organizational reconstruction. And even in strong financial times, our budget grew only 0.4% this year, while we have committed $8 million over the next 3 years to invest in deferred maintenance to improve our facilities. And last, this was the year we finally saw an end to state negative bailout problems that have plagued our county for 30 years, costing us more than $70 million. We thank all of our state legislator leaders for the work they've done, and this has been a tremendous year. Our county has some very positive moments right now, and our focus is on target, strategic priorities that are sustainable. We now know recession is inevitable. So our long-range financial model continues to have an important tool that we use to plan for fiscal solvency well into the future. Going forward, we know we will still be challenged to navigate through the difficult issues facing our county. I'm proud of the fact our board has been focused on leading the way through difficult problems in our community and not turning away. We might not always have the immediate answer, but we are committed to participating and often leading the way to solutions. The focus on prevention effort is off to a great start and will continue to move forward. But to be successful, it must be led by the members of our community, not government. We are extremely pleased with how many people from the community have stepped up to engage in this effort, and we continue to remain committed being a facilitator of this project as it develops. So many of the problems we struggle with in California and right here in Stanislaus County highlights the loss of connection for people, their perceived loss of value as human beings. While all programs that the government provides, it'll never be able to deliver a core element of self-worth and esteem for individuals that our community can deliver. Government can't tell you your value, and government cannot give you a hug. All of our programs can never accomplish that, but the dedicated and care of members of our community can. We know water will continue to be a significant issue for the years and years to come. The work and time being invested now on this issue, the tough conversations being had on this issue, as well as the programs being implemented now and in the new future, will help us set a substance of caring to protect and preserve water for the people who live and work here. Public safety will continue to be a priority for the Board of Supervisors. We are in the middle of the implementation of our 3-year public safety restoration plan. While it increases staff levels in our department for better service to the community, we have been carefully targeting investment of funds in this area to bring greater impact as we can. We have worked hard on planning for one-stop facilities where veterans from around the county can come together to serve the needs and socialize as a means of getting healthy and staying healthy. There has been a diligent planning process being led by the Veterans Advisory Committee to identify what type of building would be needed and the services offered. Through these leaderships, a nonprofit organization called the Veterans Foundation of Stanislaus County has been formed that will become a financial partner in this effort. The City of Modesto has come on board with a significant annual financial commitment, and we are already in the process of getting proposals on possible site locations. The county has committed $1 million from the sale of the medical art building to this effort. Ongoing funding for the rental obligations for the Department of Aging, the Veteran Services, as well as significant hours in planning the building specifications. Our great joy will be when we can open the doors on this facility and bring out veterans together. Our roads in California have been unfunded for years. We have huge maintenance needs, let alone the need to expand roads, build new roads, and enhance our transportation system. To do this, we need funds to improve our infrastructure to allow the improvement of goods through our county. We can't afford to have our county bypassed by industry because we do not have adequate roads. Our local cities have committed and standing side by side with the county as we are finally in the best place to make this happen. But your votes will ultimately make that decision. It is your decision. I have discussed or reviewed part of the past. I've discussed part of the present. And now it is time to acknowledge the challenges we have in the future. As we all know, the population of California will continue to grow. It's approximately 39.1 million people. And as we see, the Midwest and the East have severe climate conditions. Historically, just that has increased the population of California. But what does that mean, the increased population in California, to Stanislaus County? That means some changes. That means we'll have people moving here, who their closest relationship with agriculture is in the supermarket, in their cart, and picking up food product off the shelf and going to the counter, the checkout counter. That will be as far as the connection they've had with agriculture. Never understanding perhaps the water challenges, nor where food comes from. I'll give you a little story. As I had an opportunity to represent Stanislaus County and six other counties in the state senate, and was on the Ag and Water Committee, we talked constantly about the challenges of water. And when I talked to those legislators who were from metropolitan areas, we'd talk about water, and they said, well, you know, Dick, I go home, turn on the faucet, and there's the water. And they won't discuss it any further than that. Then the next question I'd say, well, where do you think all the food comes from? Don't you realize it has to be grown in agricultural areas? They say, Dick, have you ever gone to a grocery store and not seen plenty of food? So those are the arguments you get. You will never win those arguments with people who come from that arena. But what we have to realize here is people really do not care if their food comes from Argentina or Chile. That is something we understand, and it is our economy. But they do not understand that. So consequently, as the growth comes, and it will, because I'm talking about 10, 15, 20 years from now, and I will not be here in 20 years, and some of you in this room will not be here in 20 years, but that does not take away the responsibility of addressing the challenges we have coming into the future. People coming in will not only not understand the economy, they will not understand the lifestyle that we are used to. Now, it's going to come if you want it or not. Now, some people have a tendency to want to draw a line around some area and say, that's it. And that is usually done through a passing of a law. I want to point something out. If laws solve problems, how come we keep having the same problems? The other issue is this. When you pass a law, all you're doing is you're freezing a period of time where if you like it, you want to maintain it, and you want it to continue. If you are against it, you want to weaken it, and you want it eliminated. So laws sometimes, all they do is prevent us from truly addressing the issue. And so I would highly like to see people get together and realize that passing laws in itself is not the manner in which you resolve problems. It takes a community to give and take, and not take, rather, as I should say. There's two definitions that have changed, and I don't think people realize it. We talk about negotiating, collaborating. That used to mean, at least in my mind, I give up something, you give up something, you get something, and I get something. That definition has changed today. It's turned into a take. If I have the power and the votes and it's on my side, I take. You don't count. The other problem that we're confronted with is activism. That used to mean that people would get together and try to address issues to make people aware of the problem and come up with solutions. Today, I'm sorry to say, most activists are looking for a pound of flesh. And the manner in which they go about is justified by what they're trying to accomplish. Law is thrown out the window. And with these two definitions that have changed, our divide is widened. And that's why it becomes more and more difficult to get things resolved. Everyone has a tendency to protect their own interests. I understand that. We all do that. But if we are going to survive in order to keep our economic growth in agriculture and preserve our agricultural heritage, I believe it's time that we have to sit down and recognize the challenge 10, 15, 20 years from now. You know, I think of an organization one time I belonged to, and some people were not happy in the manner in which it was going. So you know what they did? They went out and got new members. They took control. I'm saying today that is what we could be looking at 15 to 20 years as people come from the outside and do not understand the value of agriculture. So I do believe the best way to address that challenge is to set out some industrial areas. That way you protect agriculture, and yet you provide some industrial areas where it can grow. Now, that can be very controversial. It should not be a take. It should be an situation where sit down and talk reasonable about the challenges. We should have the northern part of the county, the southern, the western, and the east. Now, some people believe it should go in all one area. Well, logistic-wise, that doesn't work. What happens if it's, I'll just take for example, if you want it all on the east side, and industry is looking for a location, and it's 25 miles one way from where another location could have been, and they run trucks every day going back and forth, that's 50 more miles per day times 100 trucks times 364 days a week. They will not come. Many times we think we've come up with solutions that we may all agree upon, but it never works because we aren't meeting the needs of people looking for certain locations or business. The east side may work for fine for some. The west side may, the north, the east. But this is what we're going to have to do, in my opinion, if we're going to be able to responsibly address the challenge. There's one other situation. We're constantly looking for improvement access of convenient transportation. You know, we've talked about the 8th train. Eventually, something of that sort is going to happen. Wow. You can jump on that and go see the 49ers, you go see the Raiders, you see whatever, and have a great time. And not be out in the freeway, which today, which regardless when you go to San Francisco or when you come back, it's really a mess. But also, with those conveniences, there's something else I believe we have to be realistic about it. It provides transportation for population who are working in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. We're talking about the Bay Area where jobs are plentiful. And we're looking at where in Silicon Valley, homes started $1 million. And apartments in Oakland are now $3,000 a month. So you see, with convenience of transportation, that also provides people to live here and commute to their work. Now, that means that we could end up being a community, a commuter community, which creates additional challenges. That means we need more residents, homes, apartments. That tax base will not take care of the increased public services. In fact, we have that challenge today throughout the county where we're struggling to have the revenues to address public services that are needed today. And then when you have this added population comes in and it only creates a tax base on property taxes, we're going to get deeper and deeper and deeper. So once again, I do believe industrial zones can do that because industrial and industry is what creates the taxes to pay for the public services. I'd like to go into the third, and this will be the final. I graduated from Turlock High School in 1950. Turlock wasn't over 7,000 people. Modesto wasn't over 18,000. Those who had the opportunity to go on to college, there weren't too many of us. But the only ones that came back were those whose families were in business. And it had to be in agriculture because that's our economy. My father was an international harvester, tractor, and truck dealer. That's what I was raised in. But many people whose families were not in business or in agriculture had to go elsewhere. I'm sorry to say that regardless of the constant striving by Alliance and Chamber of Commerce, we're still confronted with the same problem. And so consequently, I don't know if you're aware of it, but when we had our population growth, which you may like it, you may not, approximately 10 to 15% of the increase in population were your own children and grandchildren coming back because they could find a job. And now I'm going to ask each and everyone here, how many of you have children or grandchildren that had to, you're constantly telling your children to go to school, prepare yourself, you can have a better life, you can make a contribution. But we are not providing the jobs for them. We are not providing the jobs for those who can be successful and need our community and meet our needs. So my question to you is very simple. How many of you have your children, grandchildren, had to go elsewhere to find a job because they couldn't find it here? We have a community that offers a great deal. We have a community that is going to change in 10, 15, and 20 years from now. And I merely suggest, are we willing to step forward and sit down and talk without getting angry and facing the challenge of how we still can control the growth of our community, still maintain agriculture, which is extremely important, but address the issue rather than having it taken out of our hands? Those are things I'd like for you to give some thought to. You may agree with me, you may disagree with me, and that's okay. And I also want to point out this. Some of you may think I'm against agriculture. I am not against agriculture. But I'm trying to figure out a manner in which we can address it, which we can preserve our agricultural heritage. I want to thank you for your time, and God bless. The meeting back to order at this time. Any public comment? Anyone in the public having any comments they wish to make? If there are no comments, we bring it back. Also now on the board, we'll go to consent calendar. Any member of the board wishing to pull any of the items? No one wishes to? Okay. Before the board takes action on the consent calendar, does anyone in the audience wish to make a comment or have a question on any manner on the consent calendar? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and ask for a decision. Motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a first and second. All of those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We now will go to scheduled matters, of which, the public hearing to consider the expansion of the Knights Ferry Cemetery District Board. And we have Christine Tallman.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Christine Farrar Tallman, Clerk of the Board here. Good morning, Chairman Monteith, Board Members, Mr. Risen and Mr. Doring. Today we're here to hold a public hearing to consider the request from the Knights Ferry Cemetery District Board of Trustees. They wish to expand their board of trustees from 3-member board to a 5-member board. The Knights Ferry Cemetery District was formed in 1936 with a 3-member board of trustees to oversee the operations of the district. In December of 2015, the trustees requested the board of supervisors to expand their board from a 3-member board to a 5-member board. And per Public Health and Safety Code Section 9025, within 60 days, this board is to conduct a public hearing to consider the matter. And I'm here to answer any questions the board may have prior to opening the public hearing.
Any comments, questions by the board?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick comment. Knights Ferry is in my district, and they did make the request to me to get this to a 5-person board. I'm in full support of this. You may not hear any public testimony on this. I told them it wasn't necessary to make the trip down to Modesto today, that this item should go through without any issue. So full support of them increasing to 5 members.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to make comment or questions? I'll formally open a public hearing. None. Bring it back to the board. Motion, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed.
Thank you.
Okay. We now will bring, we'll close our session and open. We'll convene as the new home support services at this time. The meeting will be called to order.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, County Council Doring, CEO Risen, Jeff Lambaron, Public Authority Director. With me today, Jody Hayes, Assistant Executive Officer and Chief Negotiator for the Public Authority. Today, we have for your approval a labor agreement with the United Domestic Workers consideration. Since 2004 and its inception, the Public Authority has been deemed the employer of record, and that means that we're the entity that negotiates with the United Domestic Workers for wages and benefits. The United Domestic Workers of America represents over 5,200 providers in Stanislaus County. The current MOU covers the term from June 1st, 2012 through June 30th, 2016. In March 25, 2014, we were here before you and received authority to negotiate, seek information on basically a strategy to deal with some deferred revenue for health benefits. So the benefits program that was in existence at that time was non-ACA compliant, non-Affordable Care Act compliant, and therefore either needed to be terminated or modified. Also, one of the strategies that we hoped for was that individuals who were on the non-compliant plan would shift to coverage through Covered California. The benefits reserve had two components. One, the IHSS benefit reserve, which basically was composed of federal, state, and county money and was approximately $1.9 million. The second part of it was the provider premium reserve, which was approximately $600,000 and was composed of copay from IHSS providers. The strategy was to seek a new dental and vision plan. We communicated with the California Department of Social Services, CDSS, to get pre-approval for a plan that we hoped would be the new dental and dental plan. The conversation, basically, they said the claiming methodology was incorrect and that we needed to rebate approximately $1.7 million to the state and federal sources, and the county would retain about $178,000. We sought a second opinion. They denied it, and ultimately, we ask for a reduction in our maintenance of effort, MOE, so the county received some additional savings. The net fiscal impact was that at $83,000 a year in ongoing savings and a one-time savings of $428,000. The provider premium reserve is available specifically for IHSS providers. We had a transitional assistance plan, as I mentioned before, that would help individuals move to Covered California. Individuals did not make that move in significant numbers. A lot of them qualified for expanded Medi-Cal services, and so basically over 2+ years, only about $50,000 of the money had been expended, and so we have a reserve of approximately $560,000 for use. And I will turn it over to Mr. Hayes now.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, and CEO Risen, Council Doring. I wanted to take a few minutes to walk you through the negotiations process that we had with the United Domestic Workers of America and some of the highlights for the agreement that we have reached with them. As Jeff said, we had this plan in place to utilize some significant reserves that had built up to put in place dental vision program, as well as to help providers transition to Covered California. Those funds have not been expended. On one half, the state rejected them, and on the other half, members just didn't sign up for the transitional funds. That put us back at the bargaining table with UDW to talk about what to do with those funds. And in addition to those funds, we had savings from our MOE reduction based on the state's rejection of the original plan. So we had some resources to work with, which led us into some good conversations with the union around, instead of just trying to resolve those two issues, maybe we could look at more of a broader term, long-range agreement, with it, which is what is before you today. The new agreement, I just want to mention, is effective February 9th for today, assuming your approval, and will run through June 30th of 2019. It includes wage increases, three separate wage increases. The first will be upon approval from CDSS, most likely May 1st of 2016, and that'll be a 25-cent per hour increase. And then we have two additional 20-cent per hour increases in wages. For health insurance, we have developed a new dental and vision program to replace the plan that did not receive approval from the state. We're going to use the roughly 10 cents per hour in paid provider hours to fund this. This is essentially the amount that our MOE was reduced by, so it's almost equivalent to that. So the state reduced our MOE. We took that same funding, put it back into this program, which basically put us back on par with where we were at with the providers prior to the state's rejection of the plan. The use of provider premium reserves. Jeff mentioned that these reserves were built up from the providers themselves. So it's important to remember this is the provider's money that was set into the health insurance program that did not materialize in terms of expenditures, so it's built up over time. So we've negotiated several different areas to use these funds for. We thought we had this figured out last time, but the funds were not used. And we really want to make sure we do something to utilize these funds that had just been sitting in trust with us. The first thing is we're going to fund $18,000 per year for 3 years to set up the dental and vision program and fund the administration of that program. It's a reasonable cost to get the program up and running, as well as to pay for all the legal fees and some consulting work to do that on behalf of UDW. The next thing is we're going to fund, for cash flow purposes, $100,000 at the start of the dental insurance program. Those funds will be utilized for dental and vision benefits at the end of the program. So it is purely for cash flow purposes that we provide them that funding. And then at the end of the program, that funding is used for dental and vision benefits. So ultimately, that's the use. But we're going to do it up front to assist with the cash flow of this program. The way that we have to claim these dollars from the state, they would be unable to start this program without some type of seed money up front to get it going. For training, this was a new area that we've entered into in terms of a partnership with the labor group. And we're going to provide $50,000 per year for 3 years to assist them in providing a number of different training programs for the providers to help them improve their services they're providing within the program. So we were excited to form that new partnership. And then another new partnership is supplies. I know it seems kind of minor, but this can be very important to some of them who may be lacking some of the very basic supplies and sanitary needs that they have to serve their clients, such as hand sanitizer, stuff like that. So we're going to fund $5,000 per year for 3 years for supplies, and then we're going to work out a program where we actually assist them in distributing those supplies out to their members who actually need the supplies. So this agreement for the provider premiums will use approximately $320,000 of those reserves. That leaves us with $240,000 left. We've agreed with the union that we will continue to meet and confer on the use of that $240,000. We've had quite a bit of discussion around some advanced educational programming with the IHSS providers. We may be looking at some partnerships with the local community college and so forth, trying to advance their education knowledge, which helps them support the community and the members that they're serving. Our estimated fiscal impact is before you on the screen there. And there are two different lines there, and I wanted to talk about both of them. The first is total program growth, and you can see the asterisk there states that this combines the impact of the annual 3.5% MOE increase required by state law, so that's going to always occur no matter what, and the impact of our new labor agreement. So this is the total cost that is shared by the Fed, state, and county over the next three fiscal years, and you can see it laid out there. What we wanted to do was isolate what is the exact cost of this labor agreement before you today. So by approving these recommendations, what will be the net increased cost to the county? And you can see that on the second line. We have funding resources that we've set aside some fund balance as outlined in your agenda item. to fund this on an ongoing basis. Any additional funds that would be needed, we would look to realignment growth funding for first, and then ultimately the county general fund only if necessary. Our modeling suggests that our fund balance will easily take us into fiscal year 18-19 and possibly beyond 18-19, just with the set-asides that we put away from last year's fund balance to pay for this labor agreement. So we were very pleased to be able to reach a long-term labor agreement with UDW, but not only to reach that agreement, but to be able to fully fund it up front through some of the savings that we've saved from this last year and also the changes in the program that we've outlined for you today. So looking forward, I just want to mention that the state continues to transition the IHSS program back to the state for purposes of labor relations. There was phase one and phase two or three, essentially, it was contemplated. This is the CCI program that's discussed in the agenda item. Phase one counties are still in process. So there are seven counties, as I understand, that are going forward with their transition to the state bargaining process. They're in various stages of that process. Once we see those seven or eight counties implement the first phase, then they will look to phase two to bring other counties in. Stanislaus County is presumed to be in phase two as a mid-sized county. We have not received any timeline whatsoever from the state as to when that could occur. There's still a lot of discussion and dialogue going on with the state and those larger counties and the labor groups on how this is going to work. So this long-term labor agreement was pretty important for us, actually, because it gives us stability through this whole transition period. We're hopeful that the program transitions in easy fashion over to the state at some point, and that this agreement will help us bridge all the way through that process. But at this point, between us and the labor group, it is still unknown as to whether or not that will occur. So we have seven recommendations before you today. I'm just going to paraphrase some of them. They're all in your agenda report. The first is to approve the agreement reached with the United Domestic Workers for the period of February 9th, 2016 through June 30. The second is to authorize the Community Services Agency to submit the actual rate change that goes to the California Department of Social Services. That is required, and they need to approve these changes before they are implemented. The third is to authorize the chairman and all parties to sign the agreement. The fourth is to authorize the CEO or designated to negotiate an executed agreement with the United Domestic Workers on the provider supplies program at a cost not to exceed $15,000. We still need to work out those details, so we're seeking your authority to have the chief executive officer work out those details. And the same thing on recommendation number five is to authorize us to sign an agreement with them related to the training and for us to work out the final details on exactly how that training program will be implemented over the next few years. Recommendation number six is by four-fifths vote. We need you to authorize a transfer of approximately $45,000 from appropriations for contingencies to cover the initial current fiscal year cost of the program. We do have funding set aside for it, but it'll need to come through appropriations for contingencies to fund in the current year's budget. And then the final recommendation is to direct the auditor controller to make any necessary adjustments to the CSA IHSS public authority provider wages and benefits administration budgets reflected in the budget journal that's been included with this report. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Oh, wow, look at that. I didn't know. I don't know. Jeff, did you do that? I apologize on Jeff's behalf. It is a great picture, though. Isn't that nice? I'll just leave that up there. Oh, there was my question. So with that said, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have related to our
any comments or questions from the board?
Please. No, just no? Please.
Oh, you're pleased. Okay. Anyone have a comment from the audience?
Good morning, Chairman, Board of Supervisors.
Please state your name.
Yes, I come here this morning, first of all, to bring to you the fact that the United Domestic Workers really worked hard with the county's negotiating bargaining teams who were very, very good to work with. We hope to accomplish a livable wage for our home care providers, and we feel we've done that. We hope to accomplish an opportunity to increase their skill levels, and we have done that. All this was done in mutual cooperation without conflict that we have had in the past, but It really allowed us to really work together and to make good things happen for 5,200 home care providers in the county of Stanislaus. And for that, I ask for your support, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. Any additional comment? If not, I'll bring it back to the board and what's your comment or what's your decision?
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Yeah, second that.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Pass. I'd like to go back to the consent calendar.
Motion to approve the consent calendar.
Your second?
I will second that.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those who oppose? Pass. At this time, we will adjourn and go back to convening the regular Board of Supervisors meeting. Correspondence?
Let's see. I
pardon me.
Oh, no, we're doing correspondence.
This board has received a letter per the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act from the Centrex regarding their closure of the office located at 4701 Starter Road in Modesto on December 31st, 2015, and their intent to retain certain employees who will work remotely from their homes until June 30th, 2016.
Referred to the Alliance WorkNet in Stanislaus Economic Development Workshop Alliance. Okay, at this time, are there any Board of Supervisors reports?
Yeah. I just wanted to say one thing. I have a, today we appointed Billy Myers, who's sitting out here, raise your hand, to the Denair Mac, a homegrown product through Denair High School. And so he's back on the board. We got some youth. I know he looks like he's still in high school. And believe you me, Billy, you're going to be really happy that you look young when you be our age. But thank you for agreeing to serve. I just wanted to point that out. Thanks for being here today.
Welcome aboard. Any additional reports? If not, the legislative fiscal and management report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a moment to introduce Georgia Cochran. She's sitting in the back. Maybe Georgia, stand up and wave. She's our interim HR director as we begin a recruitment for a new HR director in Nancy Bronstein's absence. And so we've contracted with Avery and Associates to conduct that recruitment for us. And we look forward to Georgia helping us in this interim period. Thank you, Georgia.
Welcome. With that, the meeting is adjourned.